This is Rockstar Academy podcast number 30, Smashing the Box, an interview with Chad Willett.
You're listening to the Rockstar Academy podcast. Fresh ideas and powerful strategies to help you create a life that makes an impact. Starting in 3, 2, 1, now.
Well, welcome back to the show that is 100% committed to helping you live and lead a rock star life. That is a life abundant in positivity, simplicity, contribution, and balance. All worthy, noble goals, I hope. And I hope you're living those out. My name is Mark Henson. I'm the founder of Sparkspace, the most inspirational business retreat center on the planet, and also the creator of the coolest community of people you would ever want to meet. We call it the Rockstar Academy. Sometimes I go into more detail about the Rockstar Academy, but today I will just tell you to go to rockstaracademy.biz and check it out. Lots of cool stuff there, including webinars and other resources, but you got to dig into it to find all that. Just go to rockstaracademy.biz. Just do me that favor and just go check that out, okay? Because I really want to get on to today's topic, which is going to be really exciting because we have a celebrity with us today. And so it's time to introduce our celebrity guest on the Rockstar Academy podcast. So I love how the world works sometimes. You know how sometimes you go to an event and you meet the most amazing people that you weren't expecting to meet, but it just happened that you just happened to be in the same place at the same time? Well, that happened to me with Chad, actually. Several months ago now, I guess, it's way back before the first of the year, we hosted an event at Sparkspace, and this guy shows up at the presentation. And it wasn't me giving the presentation, it was even somebody else, but this guy named Chad came up to me afterwards, introduced himself, and we got to talking, and then we've been to coffee, and we've hung out, and Chad's a really cool, interesting guy with a really awesome background. He's actually a professional actor. I mean, Screen Actors Guild, kind of like real professional Hollywood kind of a guy. Now turned motivational speaker, author, entrepreneur, business owner, owns and operates an acting studio here in Columbus, Ohio, and he speaks to corporate groups, and he's helping people be more creative with his brand new book, which is kind of what we want to talk about today, called Smash the Box. So welcome to the Rockstar Academy podcast, Chad. Tell us, start out, obviously, the Hollywood thing is a big draw for people. Everybody's always curious about it. So give us that little bit of history of how you got to Hollywood and why you came back and all of that.
Got it. No, thank you. So the long or the short, yeah, I went to University of Kentucky. I was a theater major, and you know, my dad was real happy about that decision, being a theater
Aren't
major.
Aren't they all, yeah. Mine, when I went into radio originally, yeah, it was the same kind of thing.
Same deal. So yeah, moved out to L.A., lived in L.A. 7 years, and got in the Screen Actors Guild, NAFTRA, and one of my claim to fame was I had a scene with Paul Walker, and She's All That.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure you remember.
The late Paul Walker.
Unfortunately, late Paul Walker, yeah. And
you never rode in a car with him, I hope.
No, I never did.
All right.
No, I never did. You know what's funny on that? On Paul Walker. When we did She's All That, that was before he hit it big, before Varsity Blues, before Fast and the Furious. I mean, he was just, you know, another guy. He wasn't another guy on the set, but Freddie Prinze Jr. was the big star. But anyway, yeah, did a movie with Paul Walker. Did some commercials out there, and then I waited tables at Planet Hollywood.
This is a classic actor story, right?
Right. And you know, one of my greatest waiting table stories was Charlie Sheen. And I talk about this in the book. You know, it's interesting. I don't know about you, Mark, but a lot of people I do make assumptions.
Yeah.
You know, just about people in general or whatever. And I remember before Charlie Sheen walked into the restaurant, I made all these assumptions about him. I'm like, oh, I do not want to wait on this guy. He's going to be here all night. He's going to party all night. He's not going to tip me. Like,
he's probably a jerk.
He's probably a jerk. Yeah. I'm like, a lot of waiters didn't want to wait on celebrities. So I remember they told me, they go, yeah, you're waiting on Charlie Sheen. It was like a Tuesday night. And so the long or the short, he gets there with his group, his entourage, about 6-7 people. They go upstairs in a private screening room, watch a movie. Everything's calm. Food, drinks, everything. And I go around, take everyone's order. Everyone's ordering whiskey and Coke, all these drinks. Get to Charlie. He orders a cranberry juice.
Really?
Don't even drink. They watch their private screening movie. I bring the food in, go out. And then at the end of the night, they take off. And I go in there, I'm starting to clean the trays off, and Charlie's sitting in the chair by himself, his like legs up. Everyone had left. And he comes over to me, and he and I start talking about Ohio. And, you know, he has roots in Ohio. And then we talk about Kentucky and how I went to UK, and he loves horses. And he reaches into his pocket. He gives me a $200 tip, two $100 bills. Biggest tip I ever got as a waiter.
Wow.
In my life, yeah. So
totally unexpected.
Totally unexpected. My whole point of that story, every assumption I made about him was false. You know what I mean? I'm like, he's going to party all night. He's going to be here late. He's going to drink. He's not going to tip me. Yeah, I don't know. And that's, like I said, that's one of the principles in the books, like, don't make assumptions, you know.
Well, jump forward into that then. So how has that changed how you move through life in terms of maybe checking yourself on those preconceptions that you have?
That's a great point. You know, and I'll be honest, I got to fight it every day. You know, the whole premise of the book, Smash the Box, I define the box as being in our head. When we're in our head, you know what I mean? When we're in our head being analytical, judgmental, perfectionist, to me, that and judgment's one of them. And that's what I was doing with Charlie. I was making judgments and making assumptions. And how it's affected my life is it's very clear to me when I approach situations with an open mind and I'm in the moment and I don't have preconceived expectations or notations about what's going to happen, I have a much different experience. Then when I go into, and I'm talking whether I'm hanging out with friends, family, businesses, talking to companies, when I go in with certain expectations and assumptions and judgments, that experience is much different than when I go in open-minded and in the moment without any. So two completely different experiences.
Anything that you do to, you know, as a, I don't know, like a trigger for that, or, I mean, how do you get present? That's something that we deal with a lot, and a lot of people that in the Rockstar Academy work that we do really struggle with that idea of being in the moment and being present. So how do you do that? How do you get yourself to let that stuff go? I mean, any techniques or anything that you use?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was speaking to a group over at the Hilton about 6 months ago, and a lady heard this keynote, Smash the Box, and she came up and asked me that. And she's like, Chad, how do you know? She goes, I'm always thinking about my to-do list. I'm always thinking about emails, Facebook, Twitter, everything when they're talking to people. She's like, I'm anything but in the moment. And I remember when I was on the spot, I kind of flubbed around. I didn't know the answer. It was only when I was driving back, there was an LA acting coach, David Kagan, really good coach out in LA. And his whole point was, if you want to be in the moment as an actor, and this is what I use in my life, he's like, you got to get the focus off of you. He said, so few people are able to do that. He said, once you get the focus off you and onto someone or something else, that allows you to be in the moment. But people can't do it. Their focus is in their head, in their thoughts. They're self-absorbed. And that's where it breaks down. So to me, one of the most important principles, I call it three-dimensional listening in that book, is getting the focus off of you and onto someone or something else. Because otherwise, you know, I mean, you're living in your head. You're thinking of what you're going to say next. You're thinking about your book. You're thinking about your day. You're thinking about anything but being in the moment.
I was just thinking that as you said that, because I'm sitting here trying to interview you. And I'm trying to be in the moment and just listen to what you say. But I'm also like, I got to ask him another question here in a second.
Exactly.
And so I'm like thinking ahead and I zone out for like a half a second there and what you were saying. And I have to struggle to get back. And then I was like, oh, I don't want to forget what I was going to ask him. And I mean, it is an ongoing battle.
It is an ongoing.
And that's not just because I'm interviewing you. That's in every interaction that we have.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's kind of. It's a little more intense, I think, in an interview situation, because that's what we're here for, is I do have to ask you another question and another one after that and another one after that. I think in real life, sometimes we forget that it's okay to just listen and wait and pause and think and then think and not have to be thinking all the time while we're just trying to be with somebody.
Absolutely. That's it. And in the acting world, they call it anticipating. Like if you and I were doing a scene, I had a script and you had a script and I just said my line and you're getting ready to say your line. I'm anticipating my next line while you're saying your line to me.
Yeah.
So I miss everything you give me, the emotions, the gestures, the body language, everything. And that's what I talked to a lot of companies about. There's so few, in my opinion, so few companies and employees that are in the moment. You know what I mean? They're always thinking in the past, working in the past, thinking about the future, thinking about their to-do list. So few, what you and I just said, are actually in the moment. And you know, on the whole creativity, you know what the byproduct is? When people are not in the moment, what's lost is spontaneity.
Yeah.
And imagination and impulses. things that are crucial to creative process, because you and I know when you're anticipating, when you and I or anyone listening, when your viewers or, you know, your listeners or I'm anticipating what we're going to say next rather than reacting on someone, you lose that freshness. You lose the spontaneity.
Well, I've noticed that in acting with something that's scripted. You can script something and rehearse it to be funny and get the timing down, but nothing beats improv.
No.
In terms of making that connection and catching people by surprise and that, you know, all of that that goes into improv where it's just pure spontaneity 100% of the time.
Absolutely. And that's interesting you say that. One more quick acting story. I don't know. Do you know Tattletale, the security system?
Yeah, the wireless security.
System. Yep. Yeah. Brian, the owner of Tattletale, hired me to be his coach. And it was last year. So he and I trained for about 6 weeks. Brian has never acted a day in his life. We train here in Columbus, fly out to L.A., and he hired William Shatner to be in his infomercial. So we go out to L.A. It's Brian.
That's got to be fun.
It was great. It was Brian, William Shatner, and an actor they hired in L.A. So there's three of them on set. I'm on stage in the background watching them. I never will forget this story about getting the focus off you. So Brian and William Shatner are talking to each other. And, you know, if you're ever on a TV set, there's like three cameras, one stage left, one in the middle, one stage right. So Brian and William are talking, and the camera operator stage right moves his camera over 2 feet. They finish their conversation. Brian goes back on set. Shatner quietly walks over to that camera operator and tells him to move his camera back 2 feet. And then he goes back on set and they keep shooting. I think 70-80% of that room didn't even notice it. But my whole point was Shatner, 82-year-old man, by the way,
yeah,
is talking to Brian Hess and is so in the moment. He not only is talking to him, he knows when a camera operator 10 feet away moves his camera 2 feet. He tells him to put it back.
Wow.
And when Brian got off the set, I said, what in the world is it like acting like William Shatner? And you know the word he used? Lawyer. He's like, it was like talking to a lawyer. He says, so intimidating. He said, you know what I mean? He said, any gesture he gave this man, body expression, he was so in the Shatner being, so in the moment, he just reacted off of. What, everything you were just saying about being totally absorbed in the moment.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, it's crazy.
So you've already alluded to the fact that you are drawing on your experience as an actor in selecting how you speak to corporate groups, the techniques that you've put into Smash the Box, the book. How did you come up with the stuff you put in the book? I mean, where did that come from out of your life, and why did you pick what you picked to put in the book? Because you have to edit everything down, right? I mean, there's a gazillion things you could put in a book. How did you choose what to put in the book?
It's a great question. Yeah, for me, the book started with, you know, with my definition. When we're in our head, we're in the box, right? We're in the mental box. And then I defined the box as the four walls of the mental box. And I said the four walls are perfection, negativity, fear, and judgment. So I feel anytime we're in our head, a lot of times one of those four walls is going to be prevalent. Negativity, judgment, fear, perfection.
Yeah.
And from those four walls of the mental box, I tried to find stories, exactly what you said, from my life, my experiences, and most of the stories in there are from, you know, my days in LA, that would correspond with how to blow that wall down. So like, for example, the wall of perfection, right, is one of the four walls of the mental box. I use a story in that book in LA when I heard Will Smith talking about ruin the take, which is ruin the take in simplest terms is he does everything opposite the script. If the screenwriter tells Will Smith to be happy, his character's happy, he plays him sad. If the screenwriter says, don't worry about money, he wants money. He ruins the scene, emotions, objectives, motives, everything.
For what purpose? That seems so counterintuitive and maybe would even piss off a director.
Right.
Well, of course, Will Smith can probably do whatever he wants. I mean, that's what people are thinking. But what does that do for Will?
That's a great. So the two, remember, it's a rehearsal technique. So,
okay.
But that's important. But there's two very important things. One, and the most important thing, and this is huge in the creativity, it allows him to experiment and explore. He finds things about those characters that no other actor is going to find. You know what I mean? When yeah, you and I are 60 other actors get that script, we're probably going to play that character exactly how it's written, exactly what's on the page, and give a similar performance. He is trying the opposites. That's the whole essence of Ruin the Take. It's not being a perfectionist. The wall of perfection keeps you in the box. When you ruin it and you do the opposite, it blows that wall down. And the whole reason he does that is he says he finds things in characters he would never find before if he didn't play the opposites and play that side where he could be wrong and he could take risks.
So many people are afraid to do that, though, because they want to get it right. I mean, that's kind of the way we're programmed. We're brought up that way in school. It's get it right. Pass the test. Memorize the thing.
Yep.
And so that's a lot of programming to undo.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, that's... You really hit a chord there with me, because I've talked about it. We've been conditioned to be perfect. There's no doubt about it, right? National Honor Society, perfect attendance, perfect grades, right? Blah, 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 blah. And I see this in my keynotes, and I believe it wholeheartedly. Perfectionism crushes creativity. It does. I really, truly believe it. To be you, you know, you're a very creative person. You have the most creative office, you know, Sparkspace, honest company I've ever seen. And there's no doubt in my mind, perfectionism, if you or your viewer's pursuit is to be perfect, the byproduct and the casualty is creativity. Because you think about it, creativity is mistakes. It's allowing yourself to be wrong. It's allowing yourself to take chances, take risks, right? I mean, you and I, think of anyone, you know, anyone come to mind who's creative. Obviously, you're Bezos and Jobs and, you know, those come to the top of the list. But anyone, it's a process. It's a process of failures. And then eventually, right, you hit one. And that, and I agree with you. I truly, and I know this is going out there a little bit, but I truly feel we live in a time where we are so conditioned to be perfect. And we're so not in the moment. That creativity is lost in so many individuals and so many companies.
We have a huge poster in one of our rooms inside Sparkspace that says, "Let go of the fear of looking stupid." And it's exactly that. We designed the poster, and it's huge. I mean, it's like a billboard almost. And people love it, and they want it for their office. They want it as a reminder to say, hey, you know what? It's okay to fail. I mean, and I always hate to use that word fail, because I don't ever feel like I failed. I just tried things that didn't work, you know? Yep. So, and then I tried something else and tried something else. And then I think that's where innovation and creativity comes from, is you just keep trying new things and to see what'll happen. And you're not after the right answer. You're just after what's going to work here.
Yeah. I think it's a really interesting point you bring up. Of the four walls, and when I talk about the wall of perfection, then you ruin it. You blow that wall down by ruining the take.
Yeah.
I think it's the most misunderstood concept in exactly what you said. And it's hard for me to articulate, because people, when they hear ruin the take or do the opposite, they think sabotage.
Yeah,
you're right.
That's what it sounds like.
That's what it sounds like. Yep. Yeah, and it's what you just said. It's not about sabotaging. It's about finding new ways, you know, to do processes or procedures or, you know, you and I were talking earlier about how you invest or however you want to live your life, or make a new gadget, or start a new business. You know, ruining the take allows you to operate in a space that other people are not going to operate in. It allows you to look at the opposites and be in an area where no one else is, you know?
So ruining the take, I'm going to take a leap here and say, when you wrote this book and you had the concept for this book, you might have applied this ruin the take idea, because this is not a typical business book. It's not a typical self-help. It's a book unlike anything I've ever seen. It's actually a little smaller than a lot of books, right?
Yep.
So, which tells me it's probably really straightforward and packed with practical stuff and not a lot of fluff.
Right.
So I think a lot of people that'll appeal to, because I get tired of reading, you know, 200, 300 page books that have about 80 pages worth of copy in it.
Right.
And then it's not written like a typical book. So explain the book a little bit and how you smashed the box even on your own book.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly what I did by ruining the take. So when I met my editor, he was in Zanesville, he works for a local newspaper. I remember he and I sat down, we were having lunch. And I'll be honest with you, Mark, it didn't excite me at all to write a book, because I said, I don't want to write another self-help book that everyone else writes that no one's going to read. That's exactly what I told him.
Yeah.
And then,
well, your mom will read it.
Well, my mom, yeah. And maybe my dad. Mom and dad. And so he and I were sitting there, and we had this epiphany. I told him, if I want to write this, I want to be excited about this book. And I go, I want to smash this book. And then I go, I want to ruin this book. And then that's how it started.
Okay.
So there's no page numbers in this book. There's no table of contents. A couple of pages are upside down. There's the last chapter in the book is cut short. It doesn't even end, so the reader can put their own imagination.
Dang it!
Right? Yeah, the most important thing I left
Chad
out.
Chad Willett. Oh, I hate you, Chad Willett.
most important information left out of that book. But no, it's funny you say it.
Because volume two is coming out or what? Like, right. You had a cliffhanger there at the end?
No volume two. But you know, it's interesting. The reason I chose that, and I'm curious if you'd agree with this or not, but I didn't want people to read, and even in the table of contents, I tell readers to read it out of order. I feel how books are written is very much a box. Look at all the books you and I pick up. They all have a table of contents. They all say how great the book is. They all go linear. They're all page number. They're all in chapters. They go beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah.
Right? I didn't want that. To me, that, again, puts people back in the box. I want people to be in a creative space when they read this book and out of their head and out of a linear fashion where things have to be a certain way. So that book is purposely written and constructed to add to their experience of getting out of their head and getting out of a linear, like you and I say, perfection, yeah, where things have to be a certain way.
I was telling my staff earlier about a book that I've been reading that I really like, and it's a book called Love Does by a guy named Bob Goff. And they said, well, what do you like so much about it? And I'm like, you know, I don't know, because it's not a typical book. It doesn't, as far as I can tell, doesn't have this linear progression through it. Mm. It's just a collection of stories that all center around this certain theme. But kind of like you're talking about, it's not the way that books are typically written. And it's not a particularly long book. It's in many ways similar to yours in the way it's constructed that way. And it, you know, it kind of dawned on me, like, that's really interesting and different. And I hadn't even really picked up on it, but it's really got me engaged.
What's that book called?
It's called Love Does.
Okay. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's an interesting concept because the guy talks about how, you know, we talk about love a lot of times as a feeling or a philosophy. And he said, you know, if you think about it, if you really want to define love, love does things.
Hmm.
You know, when you love somebody, you do things for them, absolutely, for your wife, your community, your company. If there's love there, you do things. And so that's what you call love does.
Absolutely. The book sounds very similar. Exactly. And it's interesting you say that. Everything in that book are stories, just what you're talking about with the book you're referencing. It's all stories. And it's two reasons I wanted to do that. One, I wanted to be practical. And two, I wanted people to be able to learn from experiences, you know, that I went through that put me in my head, put me in the mental box, and then allowed me to get out of the box. And then, you know, they can draw from it what they will. And, you know, I always joke around with people. I said, it's a self-help creative book that doesn't tell people what to do. It's not how many 7-step plans are there?
Right.
Seven, right? This is a self-help book that doesn't tell you what to do. It gives you experiences. It gives you practicality, everything you're talking about. Then you draw your own conclusions. You draw your own way how you get out of the box.
So what do you want people to get out of this book then?
That's a great point. You know, if I had to boil this down, I want people to get out of their heads and into their gut, their emotions, their impulses, and in the moment, all the things that I think are crucial to the creative process. If the biggest, one of the biggest things people could take from that book is getting out of their head. I truly feel it. I think it's sad in a way. I think so many people live lives now, I'm even talking younger kids up to adults, in their head.
Yeah.
In their head, you know what I mean? Either thinking about things they got to do or things in the past, rather than when you were talking about being in San Diego, you know, or going to the zoo or, you know, seeing, or my story about Shatner, you know what I mean? He observes a camera operator moving his camera over 2 feet.
Right. Because he's just so present
He's so present. That's the biggest message I want people to take from this book is get out of your head.
Well, look how connected we are now. And yeah, I was going to say every teenager, but it's not just teenagers. Everybody's got their face in their phone.
Yeah.
Like there's a chance that on any given day, our conversation here of 20 some minutes is probably the longest conversation I'm going to have all week. Just because that's the way our world operates.
It's mine.
You know?
It's mine this week, honestly.
So.
I know. It's interesting. Just on that note, what you were saying, last week, you know, we did a press release up at the Dublin Entrepreneurial Center, and my friend came out and filmed it. And he shot about 25, 30 minutes of video, and he said he was going to edit it down to about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. And he said, well, exactly what you just said. He goes, no one's going to watch any more than that. He said, that's all you get anymore, 2 minutes.
This is like crushing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly what you were just saying. He was like, that's all they watch.
Hopefully, well, and I know this because I've seen your videos of you speaking. You can hold people's attention for more than a minute and a half.
Thank you.
So
yes.
if you need a corporate speaker,
Chad can hold your attention for more than a minute and a half. I promise you that. And he's got the book to back it up now. So it's, you're like the whole package.
I appreciate it.
Do you sing too? Because that would make you like the triple threat.
The triple threat. Yeah. No, I'm a terrible singer. Terrible. You don't even want to hear me sing.
All right. Well, the book available on Amazon.
Yep. Amazon.com. And then my website, ChadJWillett.com, two L's, two T's. Okay. So yeah, either one.
Because there's another Chad Willett out there. I looked you up and I typed it in wrong, and there's some Canadian guy.
There is. I know.
Another actor,
and
even,
he's,
I think.
And he's an actor, yeah. And a lot of people say he looks like me, so.
He did look a little like a little you bit. When the little Wikipedia picture that came up when yep.
So yeah, that's why I got to put the J in there.
Chad J. Willett. Two L's, two T's. Is that what you said?
That's right.
All right.
Yes.
So the book is called Smash the Box. Amazon.com. You can find it there. You can also find it on Chad's website. Chad, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. This is really, it's been entertaining. It's been fun. It's been enlightening. And I really like the fact that we've been able to sit here and connect face to face, because like we just said, that doesn't happen all that often.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Mark. I really, really do appreciate it.
So that's it for another, what I would say, a smashing episode of the Rockstar Academy podcast. Thanks to my special guest, Chad Willett, two L's, two T's, for sharing his ideas about creativity, business, and living and leading a rockstar life. Next week on the Rockstar Academy podcast, I got some pretty powerful lessons to share that I learned by running my first marathon. So tune in next time to hear what 26.2 miles has taught me so far.
You've been listening to the Rockstar Academy podcast. Visit our website at rockstaracademy.biz for show notes, free resources, and all the inspiration you need to live a life that makes a more powerful impact. Now, go live and give big like the rock star that you are.